Hello, everyone, and welcome to Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Skullin, and today I got my very special guest, Matt Patterson, and we'll be discussing the Goldwyn Follies from 1938. So let me bring on our guest and have him introduce himself.
Oh, here I am. I am humanity's finest human being at Mr. Matt Patterson. My parents were very forward-thinking in naming me with a at sign at the time. It was just a random keyboard. It was a mistake at the hospital.
A typo.
A typo that I grew into. So, and here I am.
There you go.
Yes. We met back when I was working for Warner Brothers in digital media at the Warner Archive Collection. And now I consider myself a civilian. So, my opinions are now unleashed and all my own. Ha 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 ha.
It's all right. No NDA or anything, right?
No. I'm allowed to say anything I want now. I can't just be like, this is an amazing movie. So get ready, Ritz Brothers.
Oh yeah. Don't even get me started. Well, thanks again for coming on again, Matt. Why don't you kind of introduce a little bit more about yourself too?
Oh, even more? Don't ever tell me to say even more about me. I was conceived at Woodstock, in the middle of Sha Na Na, in my gleam of my parents' eye, and raised by wolves, but wolves who look suspiciously like my parents. And I moved to Los Angeles, and here I am. I've hosted podcasts about on classic films and modern TV and animation, obscure films, mostly catalog. And right now I am working with Samsung TV Plus, and I am making episodes of assembling clips of old Conan O'Brien TBS shows and making half hours, kind of like Best of Carson episodes, which see on Samsung TV Plus. It's their number one show right now. So go figure.
That's awesome.
Yes, I have literally thousands and thousands of clips going through my head of Conan O'Brien. I was always kind of a fan, but you would maybe call it a casual fan. But now I feel like I am immersed in his life in a weird way.
Conan connoisseur.
A connoisseur. I have not used that. I should adopt that. But though I can tell you that when you're assembling, at the end of this, me and my partner will have assembled 300 half-hour episodes of this.
Wow.
And the good thing about it is that the show is funny. So
yeah.
It's like some people have these kinds of jobs, and if the material is mediocre, it makes it much more difficult. But when the material is good, it's easy to make something new out of it. And people go, "Oh, you did a good job." And I'm like, these other people are talented.
You just assembled it together, right?
Yeah, it's programming. But that's a lot of what we got to do at Warner Brothers was go into the library, and we would bring films out of the vault that maybe had not been seen or lesser seen, and brought them to DVD, Blu-ray, and digital, and introduce them to old and new audiences. And that was always fun. And for a while, we did have the opportunity to market the Goldwyn Library. This was the film we're going to be talking about today was not one of our releases, I believe, but I consider myself an expert in the Goldwyn girls, because I stared at them for hours against my will.
It's for your job, right?
Yes, it was for my job. I need to see the scene again.
Enhance, right?
Yeah, closer, more Goldwyn girls. But sometimes when you, it's fun. Sometimes I say that History is our greatest shared universe. You know, like there's the Marvel movies, there's DC movies, and historic films. And the more you research and the more you find out, there are stories behind some of these movies that are in some ways more interesting than the film themselves.
And right.
This film might be an excellent example of that, because not only do you have the historic document of the film, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes that is reflective of what is in front of the mirror. Thus, you know, like the funhouse mirror effect amplifies the experience.
Yeah, it almost it's almost realistic at some points, it seems.
Yes. Yes, it is. And not that I was there at the time or anything, but when you dive a little deeper behind the scenes, it makes the film more fun. But, you know, that's one of the things about watching historic films shown with context, like TCM or a disc with commentary, or even taking the time to go on YouTube or whatever and see people talk about the films, right? We live in a great era now where anybody with an interest can share their interest with other people. And this is a movie that if you haven't seen it, right, maybe you will after we talk about it, because we'll be presenting it in a light perhaps a little different than if you just stumbled upon it in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's kind of jump right into it.
Yeah.
I actually have some interesting things from the film's Wikipedia page, because that's super reliable, right?
Everything in Wikipedia is true.
That's right. Just because when you go to like IMDb or other sites, there's not a whole lot of information about it. It's pretty limited. But some things I thought were interesting were this film was actually nominated for AFI's Greatest Movie Musicals list.
Yes.
But then, on top of that, in 1978, it's in the 50 Worst Movies of All Time book.
Can you be in both at the same time? Watch this movie and you'll see that that is a totally legitimate description. It is the best of movies. It is the worst of movies.
Exactly. And so let's kind of get right into it. What are your thoughts on the plot, and what score would you give it out of 1 to 5?
By the way, I've edited myself on my own podcast saying a lot, and I edited it out, but that is a deserved because the plot is not much different than the other plots of similar films. When this film was first conceived of in the early 30s, it was a backstage musical, and these backstage musicals ran on Broadway and in early sound. Films like 42nd Street and, you know, other backstage films, there are many of them, would come to film, and it was a new way to present something that people could see on stage. That's a way to do it. But when you add in, you know, Busby Berkeley and, you know, good cinematography, right, and these new ways of showing musicals that you could not see on stage, it became very popular across the country. And Goldwyn, having his own independent studio, which is now where Amazon Studios is housed. You can see that right next to the Sony, aka MGM lot. It's a fun little thing to do if you come to Los Angeles. He wanted his own backstage musical. So one of the weird things about backstage musicals is that they are about backstage musicals. And this plot is about a producer trying to put together a musical. That's the plot.
And right. Pretty much.
And it's like, I got to get a star. I got a writer. I can't get a writer. Whoa, who are these people? Hey, here's some random. Oh, there's the Ritz brothers. I mean, and I give that, you know, a 1. you've seen it before, right? But on one end, it's a 1. But on the other end, it's a 5, because there is a historic note that what was going on in front of the screen, because they were writing the screenplay at the last minute, was reflective of what was going on in real life. TCM talks about this, is that Goldwyn himself became obsessed with the star and started following her around. And that plot winds up in this film. And the people filming it knew what was happening. Mrs. Goldwyn knew what was happening. And there it is on screen. And so that's the Funhouse mirror effect, right? When you just see the plot, it's like, okay, I've seen this before. But knowing that it's real is a mind twist element. That's
crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's because, when people were writing backstage musicals, it was just an exaggeration of what was really going on in show business. I mean, it's fictional, but it was kind of true. And what's so weird is that it was true and false at the same time. So with that lens on it, it makes, when you watch this, you're like, what is happening? So that's the one. But the five is because it really was happening there.
Right.
That's a very long answer.
No, that's good.
How would you describe the plot?
I kind of thought of it as like a reality TV show almost.
That is, yes. Yes.
But I actually kind of liked the romance story. I think that was probably the strongest part of it.
Because that was real.
Okay, there you go. I gave that a 4. But when you have like the Ritz brothers, I just thought they were not funny at all. They take a way too much time. And the opera scenes were really random. It's just all around weird. So that's why I gave it a 4, because I like the romance part, but nothing else.
Well, I would say this on the Warner Archive podcast, which would infuriate my co-hosts, was I love musicals for the plot. most people don't say that because they're insane. And this one is insane. Watch it. Watch it and believe it. But as you said, we both have mentioned the Ritz brothers. If you don't know who the Ritz brothers are, there were comedy teams that kind of came out of vaudeville at the time on the stage, and then they'd bring them onto the screen. And famous ones would be like Abbott and Costello. Marx Brothers.
No.
There were comedians that aren't, only if you know old movies, but they were popular at the time, like Charlie Chase. And the Ritz Brothers is probably considered, like, for a modern audience, the Ritz Brothers is like the store version of the Marx Brothers, like the No Frills or like the, you know, Ralph's presents pasta. Like, store brand. Yeah. Yes. They are a group of comedians and they are performing comedy.
Yeah. Is it good comedy? No, but they're doing it.
But it is. And it's in the box, and the box says comedy on it.
Yep.
That's probably why in 1978, that time in the 70s, people were, classic films were starting to be played a lot more in repertory houses. And, you know, Kenneth Anger's book came from out of this time. Like, people who were, you know, like anti-intellectuals were getting into these movies, and they'd be like, this is the best, this is the worst, right? And but that was a way to enjoy movies that came from their parents' time, right? Like they were reassessing them. Sometimes these would run on TV, but it just was unfamiliar nostalgia to some people. But yet at the same time, was very influential. Like in the 70s, you'd get people making retro 40s things, you know, especially in the early 70s, it was very popular with like neo-noir. You know, these are the good examples of that. And also like The Boyfriend came out, right? That came out of England and other things looking back at this time in a more critical lens. So it's all this is in my head, and it's hard. It's hard for it to come out, but here, yet here we are. Yeah,
here we are, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, and I would even say too, like, because CineCon was started in the mid '60s, right? So
yeah,
kind of 50, what you're talking about.
Is it 55 years of CineCon? Yeah, but like mid '60s.
That's like that.
Well, CineCon. What's fun about CineCon is that it really kind of started with print collectors, right? And because especially 35 millimeter prints were couldn't exactly legally own them at the time, and people needed a way to kind of meet, and like, you know, you'd covertly trade at these conventions, but also you'd be able to share, like, hey, this is my print of a Ritz Brothers movie, right? Where else were you going to see that? They weren't, with good reason, probably, they weren't showing it on TV. There was just like nowhere to experience this stuff. And
right.
Meet the other weirdos who liked these old movies, and you'd come to appreciate them in time. And that scene is still alive and well. Again, the only place, CineCon is the only convention you can go to where it's like, I love Charlie Chase movies. Let's go. There's a threefer today.
And that's right.
Like, okay. Right. Like,
right.
But this is a film that is like a CineCon film. And we didn't mention it. What's different about this film, because it took them like 6 years to make. So it would have been 1938. It's in beautiful color.
Right? Oh, yeah. No, beautiful Technicolor.
No, I guess we're coming up to the next thing, right? Because we're talking about the plot. But, you know, and I mentioned 42nd Street and stuff like that. Those are, you know, in beautiful black and white. But this is a colorful, expensive, lavish film.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it costs like $2 million or something like that.
Yeah, no. The Goldwyn touch was not to... You know, it was like MGM considered itself like, you know, the Tiffany, well, that's the CBS, the Tiffany Studio, but it was quality, but Goldwyn was a step above.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we got this plot.
We got this weird, obscure movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you want to move on to acting? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I skipped to cinematography. I'm sorry. Acting.
No, that's fine.
Five.
Yeah, really.
It's got all the greats. I'm even giving a five to the Ritz Brothers because you can't, like, it's a large cast of characters. He spared no expense on getting the best of the best. And it's like, where you said reality TV, or it's like it's an all-star special, right? Like, this would have been a 70s Night to Remember, or, you know, like where you get all the big celebrities and they all have their cameo moments. So this is a who's who kind of 1938. So
yeah,
I'm giving them a five just based on their names. I mean, the Ritz Brothers, even with the Ritz Brothers negative one, it's still a five.
Oh, there you go.
What did you say?
I'm going to have to disagree with you there. I give it a three.
Yeah. It is fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I like I was mentioning with the romance story, I liked Adolphe, I can't pronounce his name, the producer guy, and then Andrea Leeds. I think they were the actual best actors. Everybody else is terrible, in my opinion.
I mean... That's fair. But the lead, okay, because there was I like that by the way, the Ritz Brothers, I'm looking at the poster and the official cast list, and I like that the Ritz Brothers were second in the billing, because apparently somebody thought so. But Vera Zorina, right? She is a real interesting find in the musical. And But her career did not exactly go anywhere because Mr. Goldwyn fell in love with her and she didn't really know. And he had a contract with her, but he allowed her to do whatever she wanted, but he never used her again because Mrs. Goldwyn was like, nope. And he's like, okay. Right? Like, because he's, you know, and didn't, I think that, you know, people said like she didn't really know or understand why she was never used in a movie again. But that affects your legacy, right? I had to go stare at her name off to the side because for me, not one of the better known actresses for musicals. When you see her, I mean, now again, her George Balanchine did the, which we'll get to choreography, right? Like one of the biggest names in all choreography. You can't fault that. And that's dancing, right? That's not acting. Mm, right. But it's, I don't know if Letterboxd, you hear me out. Letterboxd is not made for a movie like this.
No, it's not. Cause I'm going to CineCon in a couple of weeks and two of the movies don't even exist on there.
Yeah, that's why people go to CineCon, right? Yep. Because it's like this falls outside the database, you know, like, and it's that's what makes it fun because you're not seeing things that people normally see, right? Now, just because people haven't seen it and don't know what it is doesn't make it necessarily good, but no. But it makes it an interesting viewing experience because you're seeing it in a theater with other film nerds in a context you can't get if you get it off of, you know, okrussia.ru or whatever, right? It's not the same experience.
Right. Well, and you know, kind of speaking about, you know, the random actors in it, did you know who Kenny Baker was before? He's the Danny character.
Yeah, Kenny Baker, who played R2-D2.
You're right.
It's Star Wars, right? That's the Kenny Baker.
Right. No, that'd be funny, though, right?
Yeah, I didn't mean to confuse you with that, but when I saw that, I went, yeah, Kenny Baker, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, what are the odds of that, though? That's funny.
Well, that would be Kenny Baker also not only was the R2-D2, but a time traveler.
Yes. And a pretty good singer, too, I would add.
Excellent singer.
Not a good actor, though.
Well, we're talking, again, Letterboxd. They're saying acting. Yeah, no. People don't go, like, what is acting in a musical?
The waiting period before the next music, I guess.
Not for me. I love the acting part. But right. Yeah, no, it's an over the top stagey style, right? You're like even in 1938, you're still getting that. And again, there were actors, and ones who we all still know today, like let's say Judy Garland or something, who can transform, like is The Wizard of Oz a musical? Right? Or is it a story with music, right? Because she just walks that line.
She transcends it.
It doesn't matter, right? Like I don't care what the genre is. She's just such a naturalistic performer as a young woman. You don't, you know, she's acting, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
But she was also, you know, somebody who could be an actor or in a musical, and you know, like again, it's hard to say. So sorry. That did we answer these questions? Do people have?
No.
I want people to come away from this being like that didn't make any sense. I have to watch it.
Yes. Well, the movie doesn't make sense either. So I guess we're doing what we can.
Madam. By the way, Madam Satan. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't, but that's a Cecil B. DeMille, right?
Yeah, it's Cecil B. DeMille's Zeppelin musical made in the early days of sound.
Which, that's right, it's in his...
And the Zeppelin musical part is insane. The first 45 minutes is not a very good movie. I'm being generous. But as soon as a Zeppelin comes in, it's like, holy crap. What am I? What's going on? Why is there a Zeppelin? What is, like, you know, it takes it up to that level where you can't turn your eyes away. But that's because at that point in filmmaking, people didn't, sound film was new, right? How do you adapt a musical?
Right. And
by 1938, I hate to sound a little pedantic here, but they kind of should have known better, but they were making, again, it's like a 1932 movie in 1938. And
right.
Nowadays, 6 years isn't that much, but then the technology had shifted.
So right.
Should have known.
Yeah. Well, especially too, because this one actually reminds me a little bit of A Star Is Born that came out a year earlier. Like, that one is way better than this one.
Well, I mean, A Star Is Born, there are multiple versions of it, even silent versions of it, right? Like,
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
But it's, yeah, it wasn't called Star Is Born, but the same story, right? And and the Star Is Born was just released by Warner Brothers, like, you know, 6-8 years ago. It's a great story, and it can be retold and adapted because it has universal truths, you know, to it, about people trying to overcome odds and romance, and in some versions throwing yourself into the ocean.
Right.
but it, you know, however you feel about the newer one or even any of them, you can have your favorite version of it. And
yeah,
I'm going to say that, well, some are better than others, but it's fun to be like, okay, this version is my favorite, and here's why. You know, 1,000 blog articles were written about that when the latest version came out. And
I'm sure of it, right?
But this, there are not 1,000 versions of this film.
No. And
the Muppet movie?
Right, with the Edgar Bergen in that too.
Yeah, because I just watched the original Muppet movie.
Oh, me too.
Just recently, and because they've restored it, and it looks freaking fantastic. The movie is amazing, and it kind of does what they were trying to do here, but successfully. But again, it's a road movie,
right?
It has a simple. But it's a simple structure because, like, here we are at this thing. We're meeting these wacky people. Hey, are you coming to Hollywood? And then they meet Orson Welles. The end.
Yeah.
You're hired.
Please get the rich and famous contract.
Yeah, the rich and famous contract. Company. And we know that they were because they have the TV show. So it's technically a prequel.
Right.
But it does. The Muppet Show and the Muppet Movie are this, right? The Muppet Show is a backstage musical about a show that's not great.
Right.
But the meta show is great, right?
Right. All the crazy and chaos going on. Yeah.
Yeah. But to me, like, good, because I guess I saw the Muppet Show and the Muppet Movie before I saw 42nd Street, right? And, you know, classic films. And I'm like, oh, I love these. Why? I'm like, oh, because I've seen this on the Muppets. But that's because those guys grew up on those films, or they were interested in those films. You know, when these, right, 1978, when these lists came out, people were watching these old movies and inspired by them for things like The Muppet Show, which knew how to appropriate backstage comedies and humors at that point for television and movies in a way that worked for kids and adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of my favorites. I love The Muppet Show.
It still works. And if you're familiar who the people are, it works really well. And if you don't, it still works. It's still fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And But again, back to this.
We're talking about but I'm showing that there's a whole world around these kinds of films.
Right. I just don't think it works out here.
Not in the plot, not really in the acting. However, moving on.
Right. No, I still can't get over the fact, because I like Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, you know, like in the Muppet movie and all that. They're so random here. Like, why are they here?
Because they were famous.
Right? I guess, right?
But they're a huge act. Mm. And, you know, my favorite thing that I learned, I guess it was, probably I was in college or something, but that they had a radio show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's, and nobody said, oh, that doesn't work, because they were so ubiquitous. Like, the radio was TV, and they just, I guess people just pictured the puppet. It doesn't, but it works. It when you listen to it, it works, because it's two characters and they're funny, even though it's the same guy. Like, I guess Phil Henry did that, you know, like it doesn't, Billy West, you know, like voiceover artists do kinds of stuff like that now, but people just accepted it. Yeah, that's a guy and his puppet on the radio.
Yeah.
You'll see his mouth moving.
That's true. Because in this, you kind of do. You see his mouth moving.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You see his mouth move, right? Like, when, if you've seen live, okay, Noun Problem. Hello, thank you. The Sesame Street parody Broadway show. Avenue Q.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Avenue Q was a Sesame Street Muppet kind of parody for adults. And it had Sesame Street actors. I saw one of them and then met her in real life later. I was like, I saw you, because I remembered her. But you see them acting, right? Because it's like, it's hard to do the Muppet puppets live and have them in a musical dancing around. So, but like, you look. You see them moving there. They're not doing ventriloquism. You see them moving your mouth, but you're looking at the puppet. It doesn't matter. Right. It's a sleight of hand.
Right. No, I agree. Because even when Charlie was talking, I was looking at Charlie for the most part.
So you're looking. Yeah. Like you, again, that's why it works on radio.
Hmm. Yeah.
Nobody's trying to fool. It's not a special effect.
No, not at all.
But it is special. All right.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to add to acting?
let me just say, acting, I think that in this format, the singing would be part of the music.
I would say so.
Yeah. So no more about the acting.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the directing. Was there a direction? I don't know.
Two. I wrote down two. Why? Because it's like, I mean, it was directed.
Yeah, it was there's
a director on screen. It was competently, you know, the camera went and moved. But again, it's like, in the studio system of this time, the choreography and the cinematography are what stand out. And as we get to cinematography, we can talk about why that is the case, because there is a very good answer that just ends the conversation very quickly. But I would say, like, if you put choreography in here, George Balanchine's work is excellent, right? And you're showcasing that dancing talent, like, it's undeniable talent that they got. And the directing was, go wide and show off George's work. Good job. Yeah. We got it.
Yeah, well, and you know how you mentioned the Muppet Show? I actually can kind of see that. It felt like we're just showcasing the abilities of all these different talents.
Yeah, you're not, the directing is nothing fancy, but it wasn't you know, again, like early sound musicals, they literally had to lock down the camera and you mm-hmm. were in the audience. That it wasn't that like bad. It wasn't mm-hmm. bad, but nobody would walk out of this and be like, that movie was well directed. Who was the showman who directed such a great film? They directed the actors great. You know, like, no, you're like, it's the choreography, the music, and the, you know, the singing of the music. Right. That's not traditionally, I mean, maybe the director did it. Good job.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Two.
Yep. Okay. I gave it a 3.
There. You're generous.
Yeah, I guess I was a little right. I still think a lot of the choices were really odd. Like, again, the Ritz brothers, Charlie McCarthy.
We're going to keep mentioning them.
We have to, right? And I honestly think there were way too many characters, too.
Yeah.
Like, just having the Olga character would have been fine. Like, why did they hire this opera singer lady? Like, it just made no sense at all.
Well, and I'm gonna just come in that the when you call it opera singing, right, that like libretto style was popular yeah. then, and to us it sounds like weird opera, but it was popular music at the time, and it's an acquired taste, and it has not transcended into modern, like, it's like people trilling. It's not we don't, that's like, it's like it was like the opposite of jazz, right?
Yeah, yes.
And it was like, I would see that. Big band, like, that's what we inherited, and popular music descended from that branch, the weird operetta, you know, which is like Gilbert and Sullivan inspired, is not what, I mean, I guess that's Cats. Right? But still, they don't use the operatic voice like that as much. It feels very affected to a modern audience. But if you're, you know, if you go deep into the 30s, and it stops in the 40s, but you hear it through the 30s, and it's an acquired taste, and it's not mine.
It's not mine either. I think they had like 3 or 4 songs. I was like, okay, I'm fine with maybe 1 or 2, but they just kept going. It's like, wait, how long are we going to be here?
Yeah, it was popular at the time.
But yeah, what else would I add real quick? Yeah, no, that's pretty much all I have to say. There's nothing.
Right, because we're still in directing and we're talking about, it's hard to focus on directing when it's more like, the director here is more like an executive who's like, you're on. Okay, Ritz Brothers, do your Ritz Brother thing. I'm just going to record it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2. They did it well. I mean, 3 is also fair. It's there. Yeah. The film was directed.
That's right. All right. Well, let's move on to cinematography/special effects.
Who's the cinematographer of this?
Ooh, I actually don't know. Who is?
Greg Toland. Do you know what he shot?
No.
Citizen Kane.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. 5. I'm giving it 5. That guy knew what the frick he was doing. You know, like he was hired because he is probably one of the cinematographers that if you went to film school, you could name. Because people are like, well, there's Orson Welles. And he teamed up with Greg Toland, who was like, and Orson said, just do what you want to do. And he goes, really? Okay. But that, I mean, again, that was 1941. Mm-hmm. Greg, but he was cutting his teeth. And the Technicolor here is very rich.
Oh, yeah.
When some people say Technicolor, they think that it's going to pop with like Wizard of Oz kind of a color palette, but this was more a Goldwyn gold. You know, the blacks were rich black.
And yeah, a lot of blues too, I noticed.
Blues, and it, you know, depending on how, you know, what version of the film you're seeing and how it's been restored, it kind of doesn't matter, because the three color strip cinematography is choice. And that is, if you're into that kind of thing, it is lush. And they spent the money and it's on the screen. And old Gregor's being, I gave him a five. You can't, in my book, you can't not give him a five. Maybe he had an off day, 4.5. Mm. But it's a five just because he's Greg Tolan and they hired the right guy.
Yeah. No, I agree. I also gave it a five. I thought it was incredible.
See? Well,
it was amazing.
Citizen Kane, there.
Well, and that's probably it, right?
Done.
Yeah.
That's why I said that one's easy. I'm like he's like one guy you're like, oh, yeah. No, done. Five.
And I'll kind of talk a little bit about the choreography a little bit here, too.
Oh, yeah.
Some of my favorite scenes were like the Romeo and Juliet one, mm-hmm. the water nymph one.
Oh,
a little water weird, nymph. But still really cool.
Well, that's why he liked her.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, water nymph. Why haven't I heard of her, really? you notice it. And it was shot. It's beautifully shot. And
yeah.
the color is beautiful. They put the money's there. It's not the Ritz Brothers.
No. Oh, when they did their mermaid thing, I was like, oh, please stop.
You're saying if they had drowned the Ritz Brothers,
that would have been more entertaining.
Yeah. All right.
No. Yeah. the Ritz Brothers. I don't know why, man. Like, when you look at the Marx Brothers, for example.
Yes.
They all look very similar, but they have different costumes.
They're very distinct.
Distinguish themselves.
Yes, they are.
These guys, I'm like, I don't know which one is which.
Well, if you were a fan of the Ritz Brothers, you would know.
Right. Yeah, maybe I should ask someone who is a fan of the Ritz Brothers.
If you find a fan of the Ritz Brothers, you should get them on this. And that would be, I want to hear a fan's perspective. The Ritz Brothers are the butt of a lot of classic movie jokes. And it's earned. It is earned. But people loved them at the time. I'm sure there are Ritz Brothers lovers. Like, the Ritz Brothers haunt these films because people loved them.
Someone was paying to see them. That's why they keep showing up.
I'm not. I mean, they were highly billed, you know. It's just, as I like to say, it's not a modern taste.
Hmm.
It does not travel in time well. But if you have not experienced them, then you too can make fun of the Ritz Brothers. I had to pull out this whole thing of iced tea to get through the Ritz Brothers.
Yeah.
I got to get jacked up.
That's right. Oh, the Russian scene they did. I was like, what is this?
Hilarious.
Yeah. It just kept going in and out. It's like, what are they doing?
I know. Well, but I think that like burlesque shows, you know, and these kind of variety shows that they used to have then, which, as I say, the closest thing that comes close to modern is still like almost 50 years old is like a 70s TV, you know, extravaganza. KISS presents a Halloween special with Paul Lynde. You know, those are the better versions of that, but we just don't really have, I guess, as you said, reality TV, or it's like ironic. Like, people knew that this was not high entertainment, but the beautiful sequences with the singing were supposed to be high entertainment, right? Like a TV show, like High and Low, and you could put it on the same night as the stage. You know, the guy comes out with the ventriloquist act, and then there's a beautiful love moment and some dancing, and that we got the comedian. Like, that was familiar. It was on stage. People liked it. Again, it's like, somebody's here. We don't put all that stuff together again. We change channels. Right?
Yep. We don't give them the time of day.
We don't put them in the same stew anymore.
Nope.
But maybe we should.
I'd be curious to see something like this, but I don't know what it would be.
Well, the Academy Awards, right? They're like, best song. Da, 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 da. Oh, here comes some comedy. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Somebody gets hit, right? Like that's, you know, it's 3 hours of clapping and tears.
Yes.
That's maybe that's the closest thing.
That you're probably right. Because I don't think there's anything like that on YouTube or anywhere.
Because it's the tone shift that seems weird to a more modern audience. But what I just sort of say, strap in and go.
Just go for it.
Because it's not anything. If you don't have exposure to it or you haven't been exposed to old movies, this is what your grandparents or your great-grandparents loved. This was their kind of entertainment. Except this was not, are we cutting? I've got a spoiler alert. This was a failure.
Yes, it was. It was a huge failure.
Huge failure. Nobody liked it. So it's okay not to like it because nobody did at the time and nobody really ever has. So, because I think it felt old and weird when it came out because it was more like something from 1930 or 31 where the musical was a little creakier and new, and they had solved some problems, right? 1 year later is 1939 when Wizard of Oz came out.
Right, Wizard of Oz. And
1939 is probably by some people considered one of the best years in classic film.
No, I'd agree with that because let's see, you got Wizard of Oz, you got Gone with the Wind, Grapes of Wrath. I think that came out that year. Maybe.
But all from the same era. And it holds up because, of course, 1939 was also the year that World War II started. So a little downhill after that. You know,
it was kind of the peak of classic Hollywood, and then it just went down.
You know, even though we didn't enter the war for another 2 years, it was on people's minds, and you see it in films. Like you see people like, oh boy, I don't really want to, you know, this is going on other places, and it permeated pop culture,
right?
So with that down note. Permeated pop culture and millions of people died. So, on to the music.
That's right, on to the music.
Because
what are your thoughts on the music?
Talk about bummers. One of the greatest musicians of classic Hollywood and pop culture died in the middle of making this film.
Oh no. I didn't know that.
Yeah. George and Ira Gershwin wrote the songs, and George Gershwin, who is the more famous of the Gershwins, died about 2 songs into this film. And their songs are great. They're Gershwin songs, but I like that I pull out kids' entertainment from like the 80s and 90s, but it's sort of like when in the middle of Aladdin when Ashman died, and you're like, wow, these 3 songs are just really freaking good, and you're like, oh, these other songs are not quite as good as the previous songs, and you're like, why? Oh, the guy died in the middle of it, right? It's the same effect. If you are a Gershwin fan, this film is bittersweet, right? Because it's he died I believe of liver failure. He was like only like 37 or 38, and he was feeling ill and died in the middle of the film. It was tragic, and unfortunately he had if he hadn't died would have had obviously many years, but diseases like that were not they didn't have liver transplants then, and this happened to regular people and celebrities. Just sad. That's another bummer attached to this film. But I give the music a 5. because, you know, RIP, Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid had all cylinders running. I'd give Aladdin a 5, just, but, you know, you can tell.
Yeah. What, just for the audience, what other scores did Gershwin do?
Oh, that is a very, very good question. American in Paris comes to the top of, you know, like my head. I am not a human IMDb, unfortunately, and I have noun issues sometimes. Look, see my eye over here because frick, here. Do. Pretend I'm not Googling this.
Right.
I, of course. Oh, geez. Okay. Beep, 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 beep. Oh, God. Crazy for You. Porgy and Bess. Strike up the Band. American in Paris. There's so many. God, it starts in the 20s, right? You know, one of the Broadway's freaking greatest composers, and he and his brother just wrote so many wonderful songs in such a short amount of time. And then when sound came into Hollywood, they brought him into Hollywood and continued the hits, and people still enjoy the Gershwin's music to this day and still being revived on Broadway, right? So no shame on me for not being able to name them off the top of my head.
You found more than I could think of. I didn't know any.
but this is one of the great things about discovering classic films is that people, you're like, oh, Gershwin, and then when you start seeing their works, and by the way, their stuff was, you know, usually a lot of it was first done on Broadway and then done again and again and again. You know, like I Got Rhythm, like from American in Paris, is done over and over again by many different artists interpreting it and dancing and choreography to it. You know, that's right. Like one of the great American composers and score. The two of them, especially the two brothers together, are, you know, American classics. And if you have not experienced them, well, get to it. This is not your best intro. This is a sad outro. Is that a good way to put it?
Well, I need to check out some more because I gave it a 5 too. I loved some of them.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason. They're super talented and they're classics. This film's music is not as classic, but I think like two of the songs are recognized as, and went on. One of the great things about music at that time is they, you know, if it didn't work in this film, it'd be in a catalog and they'd put it in another movie or show, right? Because there are diegetic shows and non-diegetic shows, you know? So like a lot of times like, hey, let's put on a show. This song has nothing to do with the plot. Da, 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 ja. Right? So those kinds of songs would pop up again and again.
Yeah, because one of them I could think of right now, like the song Singing in the Rain is in like three other movies.
Yes.
100%. So it's definitely like that.
And people like that too at the time. You know, even now it's like, oh, that's a familiar. Because, one of these weird historic side things is sheet music was... Mm. And you see this in films, sound films, especially like people selling sheet music because not everybody had a record. And the song itself was the thing, right? And people would share the song and everybody would have their version of the song. It'd be in a player piano or you'd sing it at a bar. Anybody could interpret it. And, you know, but then there would be definitive versions of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was on the list, you know, because it was technologically, it was different. They don't have Spotify,
right?
You know, in every restaurant. So it's like you hear this one version of the song. I mean, people would have covers, but it's just not, it's not the same.
Right. No. Yeah. And I wonder if there's any that are accordion versions like in this movie.
Well, okay. Now, why are you telling the people about accordion? Accordion music is a special kind. Weird Al still is a firm believer in the accordion. I have an ex-girlfriend who had an accordion in her rock band. And sometimes I'd be in the back. And some people would come in, like they wouldn't know who to, and they go, what's this accordion doing in a rock band? I'm like, he's rocking! He was excellent. I love the accordion.
Was it an electric accordion?
No. But he played it like a keyboard, like it was good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, he did a good job. I thought it was great. But it was very funny because you see people trying to be hip and they're like they get very confused, which that's unfortunately, we're talking about this movie. I'm like, this movie's weird. I love it. Right. You know, it's a very serious rock band. They had an accordion. I love it because that's part of expectations, right? Like this, again, this movie, it's the Ritz Brothers and accordions, but it's still serious and wonderful.
That's right.
So five.
Yep. Yeah. I actually liked Kenny Baker singing and Andrea Leeds. I think they were the best singers.
Yes. That's a good, who will ever forget that beautiful R2-D2 number? Bleep, bleep, I bleep you. That's not in there. No, they're good. They're like a variety show, right? You know, in any variety show, there's a variety of singers, and there's one for you. There's one for everybody. There's one for grandma. There's one for the kid. Mm-hmm. Come on down and see the extravaganza. The Goldwyn Follies.
Yeah.
I have to say, I did. You said the final letterbox score is you add it all up and divide by five. So I calculated my final score, 11 out of five.
11 out of five.
Yes. This movie is 11 out of five. I stand by my math.
All right. Well, mine is actually a 4 out of 5.
Well, if we take those and divide by 2, then we have 1.6 out of 24 negative divided by negative 3.
That's right. All because of the Ritz Brothers.
The Ritz Brothers defy the algorithm.
That's right. Yes.
Do you think their mother was proud of them?
You know, I don't know.
Where's the Ritz mothers?
Wasn't there a fourth brother too? Like, I think I saw a picture of.
We don't talk about. Not allowed. Wow. Do you think we convinced anybody to see this movie?
I think if they're weirdos like us, I think they'll enjoy it.
I stand by my 11 out of 5.
So, you want to see a movie that could have been an AFI and is in the worst movies of all times.
Yeah.
This is just for you.
This is for you. Yeah. That's a good, I can't, unarguable.
Yeah.
Also throw in the Muppet movie. See some Backstage Musicals. If you haven't seen 42nd Street, it's a classic. And if you've seen it, it's still a classic. It looks great. You know, you can't go wrong with a good backstage musical. You can't go wrong.
Yep.
A bad backstage musical, you can go wrong and still enjoy it.
That's right. I think this is an example of that.
Yeah. Sam Goldwyn would agree. Sam Goldwyn's wife would agree.
Yes.
Check out TCM on their blog. They have a good article about the history of this film. I recommend, if you're interested, they go into a lot more detail on the sordid backstory.
Well, I think I'll add that into the description below. So if anyone really wants to learn more about that, you can do that as well.
You'll see where I got my notes.
Yeah.
Right. But I sometimes cheat and I read those things before I watch it because it makes me laugh harder.
Makes it more enjoyable.
I also will read that afterward. I'm on the fence, but this one I know is a notoriously bad film, so I want to know about it before going into it because then I'm laughing in a good way.
Yeah, almost like in the way you watch like The Room or Plan 9 from Outer Space. Or
yes, I mean, this isn't... The Room... See, now this is interesting, Mr. Scullin. The Room and Plan 9 from Outer Space were made by auteurs who had no budget and had questionable mental sanity. Mm-hmm. This is more like, and there are movies like this, and in the WTF category, where they had all the money in the world and top talent, and you still walk away going, WTF. Which takes a different kind of hubris and talent. And yeah, it's not, there's no, I guess the auteur would be the maestro himself, Goldwyn, right? But he wasn't there, but he was there. It's his film. I'm going to call him the director.
Mm.
And since he wasn't present on set, two out of five.
I mean, the movie has his name in it. So
he certainly put his name on it. That and the Ritz Brothers. This is the finest Ritz Brothers film of all Ritz Brothers.
I'm sure there's going to be someone who says, I've been a fan of the Ritz Brothers. You guys don't know anything.
No, I said, I want to hear from the Ritz Brothers. I want to know what is the ranking. I want to know the Letterboxd. No, I don't want to know the Letterboxd ranking. I want to know the Letterboxd ranking of a Ritz Brothers fan of the top five Ritz Brothers films.
Yeah, now I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, I want to, because I, you know, again, it's like, I watched I was on a JAL Airlines, right? Flying back from Japan. My brain is a little muddled because, you know, I'm going over the international dateline and I'm literally arriving before I left. But I go right on to the back, you know, I'm watching the movies from Japan, right on the back of the seat. And I start watching a Japanese comedy and it's in English, right underneath. I don't understand any of it. I'm like, all the cultural references, everything. I don't know if I could say it was good or bad. I just didn't have the cultural context to understand why it was funny. It was not funny to me, but what was more funny is I was like, I don't even know how to judge this, but it was in English, right? I think that's like the Ritz Brothers.
Dang, I think that's a fair comparison.
It's like watching a foreign comedy from a land you're not from, nor do you really quite understand the rules.
Yeah. No, that kind of sums up kind of the obscure old movie tropes, like you're mentioning the operetta stuff and all this weird yeah, stuff.
I get it, but I don't get it.
Yep. That kind of sums it up right there.
Yeah, right there. Keeping it to an hour.
Yep. Well, last part here. Would I recommend this movie? if you appreciate the obscure and the weird and just the baffling, then yes. But if you're just a general audience member, no. I don't recommend this.
If you made it this far in this podcast, it is mandatory that you watch it.
You have to at this
point. You have to at this point because you've invested an hour of your time into us being confused about it. Tell us we're wrong.
Yep.
Watch the movie.
Yep. You have no excuse. It's free. It's available online.
Yeah, you can find it. And you judge for yourself. Tell us that it's actually 34 over -5.
Yep. Well, anything else you want to add before we close?
Yes. I don't know if you know this, but they're remaking this film at Warner Brothers next year.
Oh, good.
That's not true.
No, they'll have to wait for the 100th anniversary.
Yeah, then this is Goldwyn. Amazon could be making it because they have the facility. Because the logo of Goldwyn is the little house that you know, in the front that people think is Tara from Gone with the Wind. But it's not. But it looks Tara-esque. But there's also a wonderful bagel store right in front of it. So I would buy bagels and stare at it. And I'd be like, oh, Mr. Goldwyn. And eat a bagel. So don't live life like I do. Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming on, Matt. This has been a blast.
All right. I'm glad I could make this film into a little bit of a bummer and bringing up World War II and liver disease.
Yes. The fun topics.
In a musical.
Yep. Yeah, well, is there anything you want to plug before we go?
No, nothing I'm working on right now deserves me talking about it. But one day I'll let you know. I'll be allowed to talk about it. Oh, I forgot. If you have a Samsung TV, turn it to Samsung TV Plus, and you can see my exciting editing and producing skills in assembling clips in the Conan O'Brien TV show. That is not me acting or writing or doing any of the funny things. I just mushed the clips together, put a title on it, and wrote one line of copy.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, and where can people find you if they want to follow you on social media?
Oh, you'd think that it would be at Mr. Matt Patterson. That would actually also be where you could find me.
Awesome. I'll have links to that in the description below if you want some more crazy antics.
Also, right below me right now is my dog who just woke up and started crying. Like, are you done? By the way, the dog did not like the movie.
What would he give it out of 5?
2 bones.
2 bones.
Because I had to give him 2 bones to be quiet so I could watch it.
So I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, he would love 5. 5-bone movie would be, I'm sure you'd get sick.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I gotta be careful. He's 8 months old, and his movie taste runs into TikToks of dogs barking.
Oh, that's cinema right there.
Okay, for the dog, it doesn't come with smell.
No smell-o-vision.
No. Next time. All right.
Well, thanks again for coming on, man. This is a blast. I definitely want to have you on again to talk some other movies like this.
I will see. Yeah, anytime. I like to agree to come on, and then I go, what am I supposed to be doing? Oh, crap, I got to watch this movie. Oh, what did I agree to? And then I'm laughing. So, yeah. You knew me enough to pick the right person.
Yes. So I'll try to find something like 5,000 Teeth of Dr. T or whatever, or something like that.
Yeah, you might, or you could just throw, I love weepies. Anything with women going crazy, I enjoy that. I'm you'd be surprised. I have a lot of opinions on romance movies. Usually it's advice that people wouldn't want. I'd be like, why are you with him?
Why are you wasting your time?
Shouldn't you? I mean, I understand you're in economic dire straits. However, look twice at this choice.
Right.
he has some plantations in Indochina, but I'm going to tell you, this is not going to be the right place to settle in a few years. I really do. I cringe sometimes when in these like romance movies, they're like, and we'll settle here in a place that's going to have a war in 3 years, but we don't know. You're like, no, don't do it.
Don't go there.
Singapore is not the place to be in 1939.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I let reality bleed in. Whoa, that's my dog crying. Okay, time's up.
But thanks again, man. This has been a blast.
Thank you very much.
All right. And make sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Really Old Movies. And new episodes come out Saturdays, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Ooh. And video versions come out Mondays at 7 p.m. So, again, thanks again. And this has been Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin. This is my guest, Matt. Take care.